This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Orioles on the Verge. This is Zach Spedden, joined as always by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And on tonight's episode, we're going to break down a pair of Aberdeen outfielders and their seasons so far in Matthew Edsall and Enrique Bradfield Jr. Edsall, to this point, one of the better hitters in the Orioles farm system, while Bradfield seems to be heating up after a recent IL stint. We'll get into that in a little bit more later on. But first, Orioles on the Verge is brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for all summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and score available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. And as we like to do at the top of every episode, we want to welcome some new members of our Patreon community. And with that, I will turn it over to Bob.
First, you definitely want to use BetOnline. I went down National Harbor, played at the casino, lost a little bit of money on blackjack. So BetOnline is where it's at. Let's talk about our two new patrons. I bet I can pronounce their names correctly this week. Sarah Adams signed up. Appreciate that. A great member of the Discord. And the Pretzel King signed up. Automatically my favorite. It's like a hungrier version of the True Detective Season 1 villain, the Yellow King.
And as a reminder, you can sign up for a Patreon community as a paying member for as little as $3 a month. At the $5 and $10 levels, you will get access to exclusive bonus coverage, including dailies from us, as well as monthly updates to our top 50 prospect list. We'll dive in now to the main topic of this episode, which is the performances so far this season from Matthew Edsall and Enrique Bradfield Jr. And starting with Edsall, he has simply been one of the better hitters in the Orioles minor league system this year. Building off of a solid debut last summer, he now has 149 plate appearances through his first 35 games. And in that span is batting .302 with a .396 on base percentage, .452 slugging percentage, 3 home runs, and a 145 WRC plus, indicating that he is well above the league average of 100 in the South Atlantic League. He's also displayed impressive speed, stealing 20 bases in 25 attempts, playing very good defense, and you know we love to cite our walk to strikeout numbers, and Edsall's are very good. Walk percentage right now 12.8 with a strikeout rate of just 19.5, which is good to go with the power that he has showcased so far. Nick, I'll start with you. Edsall came onto our radar last year because of the way that he played after the draft, and I think we knew going into this year that it was appropriate to have reasonably high expectations for him. But so far, I think he's outperformed those.
Yeah, I mean, he's bucking a trend that we see with all of these not even top prospects, but really just any prospect. We see how no one is immune to that. Colton Cowser, Kobe Mayo, Norby, Jackson Holliday, Kerstad. No one is immune to the, you started in Aberdeen, your first full year as a pro, you struggle. Whether it's because you're making tweaks to something and you're adjusting to that, you're playing against the toughest competition you've ever played against up to this point, you're failing for the first time in your career, whatever it is, these guys struggle for a while and then something clicks. And with Edsall, he's really bucked that trend in that from the jump, he's been hot. And I've been hyping this Matthew Edsall train going back to like January when I did the Edsall episode for our patrons. Before the season started, when we released the individual,
you are
show.
The Edsall King.
Good one. I just diving into him more over the offseason for that episode. It's like he started at Texas A&M, didn't play there because he transferred after his first semester. Transfers to JUCO, where he OPS like over 1,200. Goes to the MLB Draft League, doesn't get drafted. OPS like over 1,000. He has these three seasons of huge numbers, but is not on the draft radars, or at least he's not getting picked up. Goes to Southern Miss, which is a fantastic collegiate program. He's got these superior bat-to-ball skills. I think it was D1Baseball.com was like the highest on him. Superior bat-to-ball skills, superior strike zone awareness. He goes from being a slap hitter to a power hitter. He even said his goal this offseason was to add weight and add more to the exit velo, hit for more power. Well, he added 15 pounds this offseason. He's got just 3 home runs right now, but I wouldn't be shocked if at some point in the next couple of weeks we see a span of like 3-4 weeks or 2-3 weeks where he hits like 4 or 5 home runs. I mean, he's settled in pretty quickly. He's doing what he said he was going to do this offseason. And yeah, like 10th round pick, signed for, I think, right at signing bonus as well. Not going through that major adjustment period in high A, at least not as according to like the baseball card stats go. I'd love to know what those exit velos are, if those are up or not. But as of right now, like Edsel's cruising in this system so far.
Yeah, and for the type of player he is, which is a speedy outfielder that can play all 3 outfield positions, 20 for 25 in stolen base attempts, that's what, 80%. So that's like that just basically means he's running as much as he should. I think that's right around the percentage they want players to be at. And the power is, oh my God, my son is freaking out in the background.
He's passionate about Edsel.
Yeah. He's like, you called someone else the Edsel King? Yeah. So the offense has been a pleasant surprise. And I think, like, we already know Aberdeen, tough place to hit. That's without even saying. But I think it's like Bradfield has a 106 WRC plus with an OPS of 705. Edsel's at 145 with a OPS around 850. So I think it's even more of a pitcher's league this year than maybe it has been in recent past. So just makes what him and guys like Creed Williams are doing even more impressive. So yeah, I think Bowie is probably not too far in his future and just got off to an incredible start this year, following up a great start after he was drafted last year. And yeah, you couldn't ask for much more from a guy drafted in the 10th round. He's basically performing like the first round pick.
I think too that his defense, you know, and it's the hardest thing to quantify in the minors because we don't have a lot of advanced data publicly, but his defense has been really good this year. And it's been interesting to me that they've mixed him in at first base as well as all 3 outfield spots. So I'm curious to see if that's going to be part of his development going forward. But at what point, number one, what do you think the path is to Bowie? And I'll go back to Bob for that one since he brought it up. How soon do you think we could see him in Bowie? And at what point in this season, if he's able to sustain this on some level, does he start to get more attention nationally as at least a back end top 30 guy?
I would say around sometime in June, I would expect, maybe even early June. I mean, you got Beavers and Fabian obviously locked in at AA Bowie in their outfield. Other than that, I mean, John Rhodes struggling again. Like, it's not a ton of depth there. There's definitely plenty of room for an Edsel or an Edsel and a Bradfield, if, you know, whoever. There's room for like 1 or 2 outfielders. And yeah, I think if he does the trend that we've seen in the past where someone performs well at Aberdeen and just, you know, keeps it going or performs even better in a much, much more hitter friendly environment in AA, then yeah, I can definitely see him coming more on the radar at that point.
Yeah. I think, I mean, you look at this Aberdeen roster, I don't want to rush him too quickly, but like Jed Fabian and Dylan Beavers especially is very quietly having a fantastic year in Bowie. It's not like gaudy numbers, but he is consistent. Like getting on base, there's what, maybe 4 or 5 games all year that he hasn't reached base, maybe not even that many. I think he had an on base streak of like 17, 18, 19 games at one point, but like one of those guys, and I would probably guess that's Fabian even, but either way, one of those, if not both of those guys, are going to get moved up to Norfolk at some point over the next couple of weeks. And I mean, we'll talk about Bradfield in more detail in a moment, but I would think Edsel is probably going to be the first guy to get promoted because, like, he's playing first base some. He can still play center field as well. Like, this is a center field guy. When he was at Southern Miss, the report was that he's going to – Reed Trimble is basically passing the torch to Matthew Edsel, which I just think it's funny that now both these guys are in the organization. Of course, Trimble can't stay healthy, but, like, Edsel was a center fielder in college and a really good center fielder at that. Like he can still play all 3 outfield spots. It is funny that they're playing him at first base. He's got like 7 or 8 games at first base, I think. But it's also a pretty crowded outfield when you've got Enrique Bradfield and Elio Prado and even Josenberger, who I think is playing more infield this year, but I could see Edsel being the first of that outfield group in Aberdeen to get the bump up. And he's, what is he now? And look, he's what, 29 on our list? Yeah, he's 29 on our top 50 list right now. To finish as a top 20 prospect, I think is like a stretch goal, but I could easily see him kind of finishing 2024 just outside our top 20 in Bowie and then priming for like 2025 as that true breakout. I know he got some recent hype. It was, I think Jake Rill at MLB.com wrote about him in his newsletter, or he had an article up on MLB.com. So the hype's starting to bubble up, but I think that true breakout, he could be priming for that in 2025 when he's in Bowie, maybe even finishing next year in Norfolk, and is like a top 20, top 15 prospect in the system at some point next year.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I think that if he keeps this up, the promotion to Bowie isn't too far off in the distance, especially because you do have that logical move up that you could bring up Fabian, or you could go with Beavers, who, by the way, homered twice in the series against Binghamton last week. So hopefully the power is starting to come around now, along with everything else that he's been doing so well at this point in the year. And there would be room for Edsel. And at some point, there could be room for Enrique Bradfield Jr. And Bradfield has had kind of an up and down season to this point. He appeared in 13 games and batted .234 in that span with a .661 OPS before going on the IL in late April with a head injury. He recently came off the IL, actually came off back on May 5th. And since then, has been hitting the ball much better. He had a good series.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Overall, against Wilmington last week, although it ended with an 0-for-5 game on Sunday, and the offensive numbers have started to creep back up a little bit. It also seems like he's been hitting the ball a little bit harder. And the results so far, that through his first 11 games off the IL, he's hit .244 with a .755 OPS. You're also seeing the good plate discipline come around, and the speed has been fully on display this year. 18 steals and 20 attempts, also playing very good defense. You both touched on this, and this is something we brought mentioned a lot on this show. Hitters struggle that first year at Aberdeen. And there's always that one or two players that go to Aberdeen in their first full year. Statistically, their performance doesn't look that impressive, yet they end up going to Bowie and excelling. Bradfield right now feels like he might be that kind of guy, but Bob, I'll start with you here. What have you seen from him since he came off the IL, and do you think that the slow start to the season ultimately is going to be a blip on the radar, or are you still maybe a little bit concerned about the bat?
I don't know if I would say concerned, because I just think he has a lower threshold that he has to even reach, because he's so good at defense, so good. And I should say that Judd Fabian gets slept on for defensive purposes in center field, but obviously Bradfield is an elite caliber. I don't think Fabian's too far behind him. Bradfield, you know, he's walking about 11% of the time, only striking out 18.8% of the time. So honestly, as long as he keeps doing that, I'm sure they're working on him with things with his swing, whether it's to hit it in the air. I don't even know if that's what they want him doing. Whatever their game plan is with him offensively, I think they can continue to work on that no matter what at WBOE. So I would expect him, honestly, even if he's only got about a 100 WRC plus, I think they're going to hit the 200 plate appearance threshold that they want, and they're going to move him up regardless. But he does look better. He probably had the best game of his career on Saturday, 3-for-5 with a double and a triple. You know, just if, as long as he's using his speed and continuing to develop, I think he's kind of just going to be on a set it and forget it course. And yeah, I fully expect him to be in Bowie by July 1st. And hopefully, you know, he can get the batting average over .250. He can get the OPS closer to .750. So, I mean, we'll see. I'm not worried about him. He's a different type of prospect than we're used to, with especially the Orioles of late. So I just think people have to keep that in mind. He's still stealing bases. He's 18 for 20. So that's still showing itself off, and not worried.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. There have been a lot of people in the mentions on Twitter this past week, for whatever reason, like just dumping on Bradfield. And I just don't understand it. Like, I do get it, because they probably like read a message board post and are like, this guy sucks because he's not hitting for a high average or something. But like Bradfield, like Bob said, he is a different type of prospect. And I'm most curious to know, like, what is the organization's plan for that bat? Is it just to keep doing what you're doing? If we can just get a league average bat out of you and you're just going to cause havoc on the base paths and you're going to be this elite defender out there in center field, then we're okay with a league average bat? Or like, I mean, we go back, we highlighted all the stats. I rattled off all those numbers. Mason McCray, shout out to Mason. Even though I think he's working for the Red Sox now, but going into that draft class, like he was really high on Enrique Bradfield, and there were so many numbers that he was putting out there on Twitter, and we recited them all. The batted ball data on Bradfield his last year at Vanderbilt was actually much more impressive than like his stat line showed. Like there's real potentially power potential there with Bradfield's bat. So that's why I was curious to see, like, all right, are the Orioles going to try to tap into more power for Bradfield, or just say like, we don't even need to worry about that. Like someone commented yesterday or the other day on like a Bradfield highlight. That was like, when is he going to hit his first home run though? Like he doesn't need to hit his first home run like anytime soon. Like he is a legitimately different type of prospect in this organization that we're not used to seeing. Like, is he hitting the ball on the ground a lot right now? Yes. He does make a lot of soft contact as well. At least just the eye test. We don't have the batted ball numbers there. But he's not striking out a ton. He's walking at a decent clip. He's living up to the hype defensively. He really has like no regard for mental health of opposing pitchers when he's on the base paths, because this guy will just steal any base at will. I don't know how many balks he's caused up to this point in his career already. It's got to be reaching double digits. I don't know. I haven't loved the bat so far this year, but when you watch him play, like I can't remember if it was Saturday or Sunday. It must not have been Saturday if that was his 3-for-5 game. Maybe it was Sunday. Either way, there was a game this weekend where he was like a combined 15 total feet from a double home run day. He flew out twice to the warning track. So, and we'd be having a completely different conversation right now. And I think the mood on Bradfield would be completely different if he homered twice in one game, which he was very close to doing just the other day. So, like, yeah, you looked at the numbers, like pre-concussion, he had a WRC plus a 95. Post-concussion, it's a 118. Like, he's trending up. I like what I saw this weekend. I don't think there's any rush to push him up to Bowie at all. But like, then again, if they like the bat how it is, then maybe we do see him in Bowie in a couple of weeks. And I don't know. I'm not concerned though. But he's a unique prospect in this organization that I think a lot of people who follow the minor leagues, you gotta like change like expectations and change how you watch this guy, because he's a completely different type of ball player.
Yeah, there's a clear difference between a player like Bradfield and a player like Judd Fabian. Judd Fabian's going to have to hit for power in order to stick around, because he's got a high strikeout total. He's always been inconsistent as a contact hitter, although he seems better in that regard this year. Bradfield is a good contact hitter with excellent plate discipline who rarely ever strikes out. So the power, to me, he doesn't have to develop into even a 15 home run a year bat to be valuable down the line, because he has that elite speed. He's going to have elite defense. You package all of that together, not to mention, I think, a better overall plate approach than what the Orioles have right now with Cedric Mullins. And you're going to have a pretty good player down the line. And I had said this before the season started. Don't look at the home run numbers for Bradfield in Aberdeen. He's just not going to hit for power there. You look at the players that have gone through there in the last few years. We've seen a lot of guys that can hit for power, not hit for power in Aberdeen, and then all of a sudden the home run numbers spike. Look at what happened to Connor Norby after he got out of Aberdeen. The power went way up. So you take that into account, and I don't think that you can expect a whole lot from Bradfield in that regard right away. The key thing for me is he hitting the ball hard? And is that WRC plus at least able to stay around or above 100? Because that indicates to me that he's doing better than the league average. If he does that and he can get the ground ball rate down, I think you have to feel pretty good about his development even if he's only hitting 250 or 260 with no home runs.
Yeah. And I mean, even if the bat doesn't come around, like, that floor is incredibly high. We talked about when Colton Cowser was drafted, like, yeah, it's a high floor player. Cursed that even, like, that's a high floor player. We talk about all these college guys that they grabbed in, you know, the top first couple of picks of the first round as being high floor guys. Maybe the ceiling isn't as high as some of the other options that were available at the time. But like Bradfield's floor, I feel like that's a whole different conversation, because I feel like Bradfield could be an asset to a major league team right now. Like, I don't think that's an exaggeration to say that. You don't want him hitting at the major league level right now, but as a defensive replacement, putting him on the base paths, like, he could do that for you right now and be a tremendous asset for you. So that's a different kind of floor for Bradfield. I don't know. I think the bat's going to come around, though. I'm not concerned. And it's only May 20th. We're only 6-7 weeks or so into the regular season, and he missed, what, almost 2 weeks there with the concussion. It's good to see that he came back from that injury, like, and immediately kind of hit the ground running. Maybe that first game, I think he was an 0-for maybe that first game back. But since then, he's hit the ground running, coming back from the injury. I think that's a tremendous sign. And so I'm anxious. These next 2 weeks, I know I'm going to be always watch a lot of Aberdeen. I think they're probably the most fun team to watch on the minor leagues right now, to be honest. But I think watch these next 2 weeks for Bradfield, and let's see if those numbers can continue. Like, can he get those strikeouts down a touch? Can the average get up? Like, is he hitting the ball harder? Because you see it a lot too. Like, you see third base move up a lot. Like, you see the infield play in a lot when Bradfield comes up to bat. I want to see him start hitting more line drives, less ground balls. But like, small incremental changes like that you're going to see in the stat line over the next 2 weeks, hopefully, I think will speak volumes as to his development right now.
We'll actually wrap with a point that you just made, which is about Aberdeen. And I agree, they might be maybe not the best, but they're the most fun team to watch most nights. Right now, they're 20-19, which is good for fourth in the South Atlantic League North Division. They're three games behind first place Greensboro, which is a Pirates affiliate. But the big story to this point so far has been their pitching staff. And that was on full display Sunday with Edgar Portes getting the win when he threw five no-hit innings in his start. Moises Chace has had an excellent season to this point. You could go on and on with that roster, and especially the pitching staff, how well those guys are performing. What do you see with this team, Nick, on a night-in and night-out basis?
I mean, we talked about the outfield there with two of their star players. Elio Prado, Bob's having technical difficulties. If Bob jumps back on before we end this part of the conversation, I know he would love to wax poetically about Elio Prado. That's one of his guys. Excuse me. I don't have super high hopes for Prado, but that is a solid outfielder as well on this roster. Tavian Josenberger can walk and steal bases with the best of them. The bat hasn't come around as much, but he was also a second round pick of the Orioles. So I think he's still intriguing to watch. They're moving him around defensively as well. I think there are a lot of different factors there. Josenberger is a guy who, like, just try to settle in at this point this year. Jalen Vasquez, a 20th round draft pick, is also sort of bucking that trend of struggling your first full year. Starting at Aberdeen, he's playing pretty well. Matt Horvath is still one of my favorite prospects in this organization. The bats are all intriguing, but you mentioned the pitching. They just promoted Luis De Leon to Aberdeen. And you've got Luis De Leon, Levi Wells, I try to go through it, Edgar Portes, who gets no love despite being one of the more consistent pitchers down the farm the last two seasons. Juan Nunez, who is having a true breakout right now this year. Zach Fruit, that's five. Moises Chace is having an unbelievable... The guy's got an ERA under one right now. That's six. Jackson Baumeister, who... That's a big league curveball right now if he has one. The walks are getting much better. That's the one big blemish on Baumeister's resume right now is the walks. That's getting better and trending in the right direction already. That's seven. And that doesn't even include Davy Cruz, who's pitching extremely well in like low leverage one inning outings. Carter Baumler, who's a top 30 prospect in this organization. That's another guy, a pitcher here. Zach Fruit, I don't even know if I mentioned Zach Fruit or not. Maybe I did. Either way, he's pitching well. One of my favorite pitching prospects in this organization. Preston Johnson, a guy that Orioles clearly want to stretch out as a starter. He's had some really rough nights, but he's also had some pretty great starts. Now I'm all alone. What's going on? Preston Johnson has had some really tremendous starts as well as he works his way back from Tommy John and is making his debut in High A. It's the pitching staff for me, Aberdeen on a nightly basis. You turn on an Aberdeen game and you're going to see good pitching. And even if the starter falters there, you've got Yaki Rivera, who is pitching out of his mind. Teddy Sharkey, we haven't seen the last couple weeks because of a back injury. Like this, even the bullpen as well. Dominic Freeburger was the Big East hitter of the year last year at UConn. Orioles signed him in the offseason as a pitcher. He's got an ERA like under two in a group of innings so far since being promoted to Aberdeen. So it's the year the pitcher is in full swing down there at in Aberdeen.
I feel like we.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Predicted this.
You missed it, Bob. I tried to throw it to you when we were talking about what's standing out to us when we're watching Aberdeen, and I said this is your time to talk to us about Elio Prado, one of your guys.
Yeah, he is a fun player to watch. He's a bit streaky. He goes through a long cold stretch and then gets hot like he kind of was this past week. And at least he's got all the tools. It's just a matter of putting them together consistently. So I'm glad they're sticking with him as long as they have.
We'll go now into our final segment of the episode where we shout out a player outside, or actually a pitcher and a hitter outside the top 30 portion of our top 50 list for something they've done recently, whether it's been a good game or a good week, or maybe there's just something in their stat line that we want to point out. And now that he's back on, I will let Bob start. He's got a couple of players at Delmarva.
Yeah, I got Braxton Bragg as my pitcher. Not to brag or anything, but he's pitching pretty well. I think he's got 33 strikeouts to only like four walks so far, 2.25 ERA. Just, you know, this was a guy who wasn't like that elite velocity type of guy, more of a ground ball pitcher from what I recall. He's got an interesting arm slot. I just, you know, obviously he's too good for Delmarva, but, you know, they're going to let these guys pitch. I think it's more about getting the innings and the development in than like, since they're blocked ahead of them and Bowie's blocked by Norfolk, Aberdeen pitchers are blocked by Bowie pitchers, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to just continue to get their innings and work on what they need to work on. But Braxton Bragg, whenever he inevitably gets promoted to Aberdeen, it'll be interesting to see if he can continue to pitch like this against High A hitters. And my hitter is Angel Tejada, who I kind of predicted. I think we predicted Anderson De Los Santos would be the big breakout hitter at Delmarva this year. That does not appear to be the case, at least so far. But I think I did mention Angel Tejada as a guy who, you know, got a lot more run than you would expect as a 19-year-old last year. Struggled a little bit, but got a lot of playing time. And this year he's batting like 282 with the OPS around 725. And he's really yet to start walking in his career. He's more of a free swinger, has stolen 19 bases, hit a couple home runs, some doubles. If he can learn to, you know, get those swing decisions a little bit better, walk a little bit more, I think he's a guy, as he's only 20 years old still, that could really surprise some people in the next couple of years.
I'm going up to AAA, and this is rare for me, I feel like. I'm going with two older guys, not so much prospects, but I'm going up to AAA Norfolk, and I just want to shout out Daniel Johnson. And I think it was our spring training like preview episode where we talked about players who aren't going to make the major league roster but are going to pop in spring. And I'm pretty sure Zach said Daniel Johnson, and I had no idea who that was or that he was even on this roster. I'm pretty sure I just pulled up the roster real quick, and I was like, oh, there he is. Well, now he's OPSing over 900 in Norfolk. He's got 8 home runs, 15 total extra base hits. He's this year's Daz Cameron, right? But I feel like with more power and a better strikeout rate. But just this past week, he hit 400 with a pair of home runs, a pair of doubles, 500 on base percentage. And also looked like he's typically at the top or near the top of the exit velo leaderboard on a nightly basis for Norfolk. he's got a 45% hard hit rate for the Tides this year, which is behind Holiday, Mayo, Kerstad, and Stowers. But Holiday actually has the hardest hard hit rate in Norfolk right now at 49%. Twitter would tell you otherwise, but he's hitting the ball incredibly hard down there. Kerstad's at 48%, Mayo's at 47%, Stowers at 45%. So Daniel Johnson is right there with Kyle Stowers and not too far behind Kerstad, Mayo, and Holiday in terms of hard hit rate. I just wanted to shout him out. He's having a good year. Break glass in case of emergency guy, but tremendous season. And then Jonathan Heasley, he pitched 5 shutout innings against Lehigh Valley this past weekend. I think it was on Sunday. And Lehigh Valley's got a pretty solid AAA lineup, like David Dahl, Jordan Luplo, Esteban Quiroz, old friend Cody Roberts, even for the diehards, if you remember him. But just one hard hit ball allowed in 5 innings for Heasley, 2 hits, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. I know that he had the 3 outings in Norfolk already this year, and they were terrible. But in 20 innings in Norfolk, he has a 0.45 ERA, 18 strikeouts, just 4 walks. This past week, he actually pitched 7 shutout innings. Maybe he just needed some more time with Justin Ramsey and Orioles player development down there. They make their tweaks after he came over from Kansas City, but he's still on the 40-man roster. So it's really good to see him have some success if the Orioles do need to go back with him to him for whatever reason. Like, I don't know. I think I'm intrigued again with Heasley and what he can provide.
Yeah, I actually liked his stuff when he came up for those few handful of appearances. Obviously, the results outside of the first appearance weren't there, but the stuff looked very good to me for my, you know, amateur, not scout eyes. And then he goes down and his pitch lights out in AAA. So, yeah, I'm intrigued to see if he can be another guy that could help out at some point down the line since he's an optionable arm.
Yeah, I could definitely see him back in the major leagues at some point this year. And I'll go with my guys now. I'll start with my hitter, who is Elio Prado. Bob touched on it. Prado does run hot and cold. And so far this season, we've seen a little bit more of the cold than we would like. But over the weekend, he hit the ball about as well as anybody can, including in Sunday's series finale against Wilmington when he went 3-for-4 with a home run and a double. Over the final 3 games of the Wilmington series, he went 5-for-12 at the plate, which was good for a .417 batting average, and walked twice and struck out twice. The overall stat line, still not great to this point in the season, 134 plate appearances, hitting .228 with a .664 OPS. But keep in mind that even though I feel like we've been talking about Prado for a long time now, he's only 22 years old. This is his first extended shot at Aberdeen. I think as time goes on, he's got the potential to get better. And then my pitcher, I'm going to go with Jared Beck. And Beck has had just one of the more bizarre seasons of any pitcher in the minor leagues to this point. His first outing of the season, he gave up 5 runs, all of them earned in just 2/3 of an inning. And that started off a really bad 5-game stretch to start the season where he walked 8 batters in 5 1/3 innings pitched and it posted an ERA of 2.25. Something has flipped, though, because over his last few outings, he has been excellent, and that continued on to Sunday when he delivered 2 shutout innings in Delmarva's win at Lynchburg, and it continued his current scoreless inning streak. So far in his last 5 games, he's thrown 8 1/3 scoreless innings, has walked 5 batters in that span, but has also struck out 9 and given up just 4 hits. Beck is 7-foot left-hander in his second stint at Delmarva. It was a rough go early on for him. He clearly still needs to get better in some areas, but hopefully what we've seen from him lately is going to be what we see from him the rest of the way.
I just want him to make the major leagues to have the record for the tallest pitcher in MLB history, because I don't think there's been a 7-footer in MLB history yet. So if he can just get it together and at least just get 1 game with the Orioles, I think that would be pretty cool. But it is, you know, 2 weeks ago, I was thinking, like, how much longer is this guy going to be in the organization, to be honest, because it wasn't just bad. Like, you read it off the numbers. It was awful. But he has completely turned it around, and that's good to see. It's his second or third tour through Delmarva, but he's 7 feet. There's a lot to work with there. There's a lot of moving parts that he's got to get in sync. So, good for him.
Yeah, if there's anyone that I'm going to be patient with as far as mechanics and just getting their stuff together. It's going to be the 7-foot lefty. So yeah, I was glad to see that he's performed better of late, because I felt like last year he showed flashes of brilliance. So hopefully he can continue that.
That does it for this episode. We will be back later this week with our mailbag, and we're going to get into a lot of topics on an episode, including Gunnar Henderson's MVP chances, Cade Povitz and Chase McDermott. And we're also going to talk a little bit about the draft. So you are not going to want to miss that. In the meantime, you can find us on our many social media channels, including Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X, TikTok, and YouTube. We're also over at Substack, OrielsOnTheVerge.substack.com. Nick has a new article up over there with another preview of the draft. Nick has done a few articles to this point about the draft that have been really good. His latest one just dropped earlier this week, so you're not going to want to miss that. As a reminder, OrielsOnTheVerge.substack.com. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Verge, presented by Bet Online and part of the Believe Podcast Network.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.